Love, Lust, and Laughter with Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I have one of the most progressive minds on the planet as my guest again today, Joan Price. And welcome to the program, Joan. I'm so glad you're here again.
Thank you. That's quite a compliment.
Well, you are progressive. And I love this quote that's on your website. It begins at JoanPrice.com is her website. Society's view of seniors as sexless is wrong. We're redefining this aging stuff. Now, I'm speaking about aging and sexuality, but I want to encourage listeners of any age to stay tuned because you're going to learn a lot. And we're hoping, Joan and I are hoping to discuss tips for better sex, whether you're partnered or not. How do I date at this age? But I'm going to add at any age because a lot of our tips will be really for any age. And the importance of self-pleasuring for health and sex toys and that sort of thing. Now, we're fortunate because Joan will return to this program next week. So there's lots to discuss. We encourage you to listen and call in if you have any questions because Joan is wonderful. She was last on this program twice in July. So glad you're back.
Thank you.
And you do a lot of speaking because you have two books. I'm actually quoted on three pages in your most recent book.
And you give wonderful advice.
Thank you. And I actually got a new client from reading that. So
that's
great. Was very nice. But Naked at Our Age is Joan Price's most recent book, talking out loud about senior sex. And the book that preceded it is Better Than I Ever Expected, Straight Talk About Sex After 60.
Right.
And how do you summarize your motivation for writing the first book and then the second?
Well, the first book was to celebrate senior sex. I was in a wonderful, hot, spicy, fabulous, profound, loving relationship with a man who, well, I met him when I was 57 and he was 64. When I wrote the book, I guess, let's see, I was 61 and he was 68. And we just had never read anything that was empowering about senior sex. So I wrote that. And after that book came out, a lot of readers said to me, well, that's great, you're having such great sex, but I'm not because here's what's going on for me. And I realized that the next book needed to address the problems, not just celebrate the joys. So the second book had the one that just came out, Naked at Our Age, has 135 reader stories and 45 experts, such as you, addressing the problems. And I'm just so proud of it. I'm so happy to have been able to put together the people who have the questions with the people who have the answers.
And you do it so well. And I especially appreciate Dr. Dean Adele's blurb on the back cover of Naked at Our Age. Dean Adele is in the Bay Area where you are, well, a little north of the Bay Area. But when I lived in Palo Alto, I mean, he's been a fixture, and he has a syndicated radio show. And
well, he used to. He actually retired as Naked at Our Age was coming out.
Oh.
And I said, no, Dean, you can't do that. We need you every day.
And, yes.
And so we sent him, though, the manuscript for Naked at Our Age and say, would you mind? I know you're busy. I know you're retiring. I know this is the last thing on your mind, but you've often talked about senior sex in a way that is very positive, and would you mind looking at this and if you could see your way to writing a blurb for it? And he went wild over it.
I know. He wrote, hang on, because Naked at Our Age breaks all the barriers and goes where ordinary books on the subject dare not. Some readers may be shocked. and others delighted by this bold and uncensored approach. The message is clear. As far as sex in the senior years, the best is yet to come. And it really is, except most seniors don't quite believe it, and they need a little help, and that's where you come in.
Well, that's the thing. I discovered, you know, I've been fighting for years against what I call the ick factor, which is society's view of seniors as sexless or as pathetic if they're sexual, or ludicrous, even worse. And then I discovered as I went speaking about the subject that we seniors have a lot of misconceptions ourselves.
Yeah.
We have myths that we believe that really put a damper on our sex lives because of our belief system as much as or maybe more than what's really going on physically. So I realized that was part of my new mission, was not just to change society's view about senior sex or normalize it, but to also change our own view of it.
Indeed. Now, one of the troubles that many seniors have is their adult children. Mm-hmm. First of all, adult children don't really want to even imagine their parents being sexual, or, say, a widowed parent or a divorced parent being sexual again. And so that's one of the stumbling blocks for a lot of seniors.
Yeah. But if we look at it, it's just the reverse of what happened before. We didn't want to think of our children as being sexual either.
Well, that's a very good point.
So we could just even say to them, look, you know, you fought so hard to have me treat you like an adult. Give me the same credit.
Love that. That's such good advice. And you have so much good advice. And, of course, you are an expert writer. You were a high school teacher for, what was it, 24 years?
22
English?
Years, yes. I taught English high school
teacher.
English for 20,
yes.
22 years.
And you're also an exercise professional. And mm-hmm. I like what it says on your website, joanprice.com. You believe that exercise should be a treat, not a treatment.
Exactly.
Here. Yeah, when we're young, exercise is an option. When we're older, it's a mandate. We've got to do it, use it or lose it, and all of those things to keep our mobility and to keep well. And also, we have better sex if we're more flexible.
Well, not only that, but exercise improves blood flow, not only to the muscles and to the heart, but to the genitals, too. So yeah. It's also important for physiologically enjoying sex.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, we're more likely. I mean, some seniors complain that orgasms are a little more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And so more blood flow and more foreplay. And actually, you have on your blog site some good advice from Michael Castleman on delayed ejaculation.
Mm-hmm.
And I do encounter this with my older male clients. With the younger ones, it's usually premature ejaculation. But do you remember what Michael Castleman said? He said that the nerve system is a little bit different, maybe not
yes.
quite as...
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And needing a little more foreplay. And what else did he say? Do you recall?
Well, he did. Let's see. I don't have that one in front of me right now.
Yeah.
But many of my experts have recommended toys for men.
Right.
As well as for women that will give that extra oomph. And also not to be so intercourse driven. To
exactly.
relax about the goals and to enjoy the sensual pleasure and to enjoy pleasing your partner. To enjoy your partner pleasing you without the goal necessarily having to be penetration or even erection. And for some men, because they have difficulty achieving erections and orgasm, they often will just turn their face to the wall and not try and not stay sexual with their partner if they have one. And that really hurts the relationship, especially since it's harder for men to talk about these issues. So often women write to me about this going on, and they say, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why. I don't know why he doesn't want to have sex anymore.
Well, I've seen it quite a few times in my private practice.
Yeah.
With couples, and they stop being affectionate, and the woman may think, oh, he's having an affair. And really, he's lost his confidence because men are often tied in very much, identified very much with their penis and the ability for the penis to get erect and stay erect, or even this ejaculation business, the delayed ejaculation. And there are some, I found this is true, particularly for my fairly newly single older guy clients, where the girlfriend may think that for the man to ejaculate is evidence that he's turned on by her.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's she needs that evidence, and that puts more pressure on the guy.
Because she doesn't understand.
Right.
So they need to talk to each other. The same thing is that many men think that the woman isn't aroused or is pretending to be aroused if she's not lubricating. Well, many of us don't lubricate much. Don't lubricate enough that anyone would notice it.
Exactly.
So we have to accept the changes in our bodies, but to communicate clearly and to look for creative solutions so that we will enjoy sexual pleasure.
Exactly. And you're doing a lot of speaking engagements, and actually in the first 15 minutes of this program, you've already given some tips for better sex, whether you're partnered or not. But let's give just a few more before we get into how do I date at this age. And I want to add, or really at any age, because so many of the tips are appropriate for younger people, too.
Just say something first about the speaking engagements.
There
are many writers who dread this part of their life, that they are expected to promote the book, expected to go out and meet audiences, to do public speaking. I love this part.
I know you do.
I love it. I learn so much from the people I meet, and I really feel that I'm able to connect with people and to give them, even in the course of a short talk, give them something they can take home that will change things for them. I got an email from one woman who came to a talk of mine, and she said, I think you saved my marriage.
Oh, see, now that's the kind of thing that really makes a difference. When you feel you're making a difference like that, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Saved my marriage. And it's, of course, one reason I love the work that I do, too.
Yes.
To make
absolutely
a difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But, of course, you're a writer, and so people can hold on to your books and read what you've written and go back and see it again. And I think you're making a big, big difference. And you really do celebrate the joys of zesty sex.
Thank you.
And it's why I had you back. Because we need to talk way more about this, the subtitle of your second book, Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex.
Well, that's the thing. If we don't talk about it, we will be stuck with our own misconceptions and our own level of maybe not such great sex.
Yeah.
But if we can talk out loud and listen to other people who are talking out loud, and, you know, I used to be embarrassed at the idea of doing this, but once I started doing it, it felt so empowering to everybody that I stopped being embarrassed. So I'm certainly not someone who used to talk about sex.
Yes, but you've learned, and I think that the love of your life, Robert, who tell our listeners you did in July, but I think we need to hear your love story again before we get back to some of the tips and how he wanted you on his deathbed to continue your work.
Yes.
Talk about motivations, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I love to tell the love story, so you might have to stop me if I go on too long.
No, no, Joan, you tell it, because it's passionate and it's real. And people love stories, especially love stories.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, I was teaching, I am still teaching contemporary line dancing. And one evening, a man walked into my class, and I'll tell you, I just had to remember to breathe.
Mm.
I looked at him, and it was lust at first sight. I wouldn't
say
lust, because we need to know each other, but
yeah. It
was... My heart was pounding, and I looked into his blue eyes and said, oh, my gosh, this man, oh.
Yeah.
And then when he started to dance, revealing a lifetime of dance training, he started dancing at the age of 2, which I didn't know at the time.
Wow.
And so everybody takes care of a newcomer in my class. They all say, don't worry if you don't get it right away. Just, you know, just enjoy it. Get a little bit at a time. And he, started to dance, started to move his hips. I was a goner, Diana. I was totally gone. I kept losing my place in the dance I was teaching. I didn't know what I was doing anymore, except I said, please, please, please let this man keep coming to my class. Well, he did.
Yeah.
And although most love stories would say on the third time we kissed, no, we didn't kiss for 9 months.
Oh, that was kind of wasted time, given what happened to you. But anyway, it was what it was.
Wasted because this was a man who was worth waiting for.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes. He did not engage in relationships quickly. He had been divorced a long time. He had been solitary and making his work as an artist, and a very contemplative man, very philosophical. And if he wasn't ready to dive into anything, well, although I kept pursuing him, I kept putting myself in front of his face all the time. Say, hello, notice me now, would you please? You come to my class, notice me now. But he took his time, and that part of the story is described in great detail in Better Than I Ever Expected.
Yes,
but
I remember.
To make it a little shorter, I ended up propositioning him after 9 months.
How bold of you, Joan.
Well, it just wasn't going to happen otherwise. He seemed perfectly content with just having a dance relationship and a casual friend kind of thing. And meanwhile, I'm just going crazy over this man. So
and no doubt having fantasies about him. And haven't you made the connection? I know I made it a long time ago, even in my 20s, that how a man dances is a fairly good predictor about how he'll make love.
And I looked at how gracefully he used his hands during the dance. Oh, we all know about looking at the hands, right?
The hands and the coordination.
Oh, my goodness. And so when I propositioned him, I did it by email.
Ah.
And one of the things I said was, I can't help wondering what it would be like to dance with you without footwork.
Whoa, the writer in you. just the right words. How did he respond?
Well, first he turned me down.
Oh.
He said he admired my bravery, because it was a longer email than that, and I said in it, I hope if this isn't what you're interested in, that you please, please won't let it make a difference in our friendship. And he wrote back that he admired my courage and that he was attracted to me too, yes, but we didn't need to rush anything, did we?
Ah.
9 months, rush anything. He said, I don't get into sex casually.
Mm.
I have to know the person. And so as frustrated as I was hearing that I'd just been turned down, I thought, what a man. How often do you hear that?
Well, and I'm sure that piqued your interest even more, because whereas we think of men as the ones who like the chase,
mm-hmm.
and really don't like the desperation, that was not desperation at all, and we're going to get into this when we talk about online dating, to avoid sounding desperate. You weren't sounding desperate. You were just sounding interested. But we do think of men as appreciating the chase. It's sort of hardwired in them. But you no doubt, because you're such an evolved woman, you no doubt. And also you've had a lot of different, well, I shouldn't say that, but I mean, you had been single a long time.
I had been around the block, my dear.
Around the block.
And under the covers.
So you knew that here was a really good man.
Absolutely. And then the interesting thing was that after I read that email, a few hours later, another one came in that he had changed his mind.
Good.
He said, it's been a while for these old parts. Maybe it's time.
Oh, so good. So then you had a real date soon after that, I bet.
We had a real date 2 days after that, and we started kissing and didn't stop for 7 years.
Isn't that beautiful? And I know you were married for the last 2 or 3 years.
Two of them, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, just over two.
And he passed away from cancer
yes.
in 2008, I believe.
That's right.
So that was your motivation for your first book, in part.
It was also the motivation for the first book, to celebrate senior sex, because
yes.
once we started going to bed together, I mean, it was amazing, exhilarating, and it wasn't like it was the same as it was in our 20s or 30s.
Right.
It was better.
Better, yes.
Better, because both of us really loved the long, slow arousal. How often do women say, I just wish he'd slow down and give me some foreplay? Well, when a man is older, he loves the foreplay. He's not in a rush. He doesn't have a goal. He doesn't have anyone to inseminate. He doesn't
exactly.
have to make the species survive.
Exactly. And, you know, Gail Sheehy talked years ago about the crossover after 50, where
mm-hmm.
the man has more, well, I don't know that she said this, but somebody said this, more of the Carl Jung, the anima, the female side,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and the woman has more of her animus, the male side, so that the man slows down, is more romantic,
yeah.
enjoys the foreplay,
yeah.
and the woman is a little more assertive,
mm-hmm.
and she can say, you know, this is what I really need. She has
yeah.
words for it.
Yeah.
This is what I desire.
Oh, well, that's the other part of what made it so wonderful, is that we had had decades of relationship experience, of learning to communicate with a partner, of learning what we liked and what we had to give.
Mm-hmm.
We could communicate all that, and whoa, is that special?
Yes. It is special.
Now, I didn't know we would
you know,
fall in love, but we did.
Yeah.
Immediately, almost immediately after we, it was like getting out of bed that first time. We go, oh, this is what we've been waiting for, and I think I love you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. And it is exhilarating, and it makes all the difference in one's senior life.
Yes.
We are going to go to a break in about 5 minutes or a little less. But let's start.
Can I talk about Robert's support of the new book, although he didn't live to see it?
Yeah. Oh, yes. And yes, do talk about that.
Because that's an important part of our story, I think.
Yes.
Even when he knew he was dying, he said to me, promise me you'll keep doing your work.
Yes, I did want you to talk about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I would be getting emails from people who had sexual problems that they wanted answers to, which is what, of course, led to Naked at Our Age. And this time it was just a glimmer in my eye. I was saying, this is what I've got to write about next.
Uh-huh.
And I would say, Robert, let me read you this email I just got. And he would say, oh, you must find an answer for her.
Yes.
And then I would, and he'd say, oh, you must do this again. You must keep doing this.
Yeah.
And he even wrote part of Naked at Our Age, because one of the chapters is Unlearning Our Upbringing, and I have a chapter for women's stories and men's
yes.
stories.
And
yes. he wrote a good deal of the men's stories, because he felt he had to unlearn his upbringing. born in 1936, about what a man was supposed to be and how he was supposed to explore his sexuality, and that women were supposed to enjoy it. Yes, but wouldn't they enjoy it if he was getting pleasure? Isn't that the way you did it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so he had to unlearn all that and be taught, he said, by very wise women in his life.
And most especially you.
Yes, yes, most especially.
But you learned together, and wasn't that exhilarating? And,
yes.
And I know that was a relationship, a marriage that was meant to be and changed your life.
Yes. And still does, as
and
I share what I've
does.
Learned.
It
still does change my life.
Yes. So I know you feel so fortunate to have had Robert in your life. Well, and now you're a much better speaker, and I think that when we come back from the break, we're going to want to get into How the heck do I date at this age?
Yeah, especially and, given a story like I just told. How do you go on and date?
And some of my listeners, and I think you and I spoke about it last July a little bit too, know that I was widowed in the springtime of 2000, and then I dated for maybe 9 years. I didn't date right away, but maybe a year after, for about 9 years, using eHarmony and Match.com and kissing a lot of frogs. And, and then I got really, really, really lucky to have met my love of now 15 months. And I feel so fortunate, but like you felt with Robert, that you could bring some life experience to this.
Right.
And but we're going to go back to kind of the single focus and seniors, other ages. How do you navigate online dating? And how do you bring up some tender subjects like safer sex or maybe your own personal sexual issues? So we want our listening audience to stay with us. We're going to go to a break, and we'll come back and talk about these things. So please stay with us. Thank you.
Cosa leggerai con calibro affascini il tuo cuore, e se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore.
Yes, we're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I was just reflecting that in the late 60s, there was a television show called The Dating Game. And guess what? I was a contestant. Yes. And it was the April 1st show, but they pre-taped it and didn't tell me that it was April 1st show. So Rich Little, the comic impersonator, played all three parts. And three bachelors, remember how it went?
Yes, uh-huh.
So anyway, I won him.
Did you now?
Even
was
though
he worth winning?
Oh, yeah, he was. I mean, we had a kind of a short relationship, but it was fun, and they sent us on a really good date, and he had a bad date through the dating game before that, and so we had a pre-date before they sent us.
Oh my!
Yeah, and it was fun. He was not as funny as I was sort of expecting him to be, you know, in person.
Uh huh. He didn't have his writers.
maybe, but you know, his gift was really being able to impersonate any voice.
Mm.
And I happened to see him about 7 years ago at a fundraiser in Palm Springs, and he was performing, And I went up to him afterwards, and I said, hey, Rich, do you remember me? And his much younger wife, I think it's his third wife, was kind of looking at me suspiciously. But I said, do you remember me? And I said, the dating game? And I said, remember, I lived in Pasadena then, and you got lost coming from Hollywood? He said, that sounds like me. Yes, I remember you. But, of course, now with the Internet, anyone can play their own dating game.
That's right.
Online. And so every year we have hundreds of thousands of people that find their perfect match through online dating services.
At all ages, too.
At all ages. And so you have been doing and are doing some workshops that help people with this. And, like, what are the guidelines for online dating and writing a cool profile, as you put it on your website?
Mm-hmm. There's so much because it's a three-hour workshop. But
yeah,
I can give you a couple of things.
Yeah, good.
Because one thing that startles people is, I say, to make a list of what they're looking for.
Uh-huh.
They go, what? What I'm looking for? Well, how can you find it if you don't know what it is?
Yeah.
And often, and they'll say, but won't that rule out? So, well, let me start here. I suggest that people make a list of the 10 non-negotiables, 10 things that if these were not his qualities, the thing is, the deal is off totally from the
beginning. Deal breakers.
So why bother? Yes, 10 deal breakers.
Yeah.
And then a second list of 10 that I call would be nice.
Would be nice. Yeah, that's good.
This would change the okay, acceptable to, oh, this is getting closer to my ideal.
Uh-huh.
And then a third column, a third list that I call as long as I'm asking. And these are 10 more things that it would be magic if you could find someone with all 30. You're not going to turn anyone down who doesn't have that last list. But, wow, if someone had all of it, that's really, really important to know. So
as long as I'm asking, would you expand a little bit more on that last list of 10?
Well, I can give
third?
You a couple of examples from my list.
Yeah, good.
Like a couple of the things from the gotta be is he's got to be physically active. He's got to read and talk books. Be brainy, attract me, be open-minded and communicative. He loves his work or his hobby. He's supportive of and interested in my work. That's not all 10, but that's the idea of the things that are really bottom line to me.
Yeah.
And then in the would be nice, if he lives within 20 miles.
Yeah.
Loves walking, is either vegetarian or vegan friendly.
Uh-huh.
Teaches me and learns from me. Those are part of what's on that list. Then the as long as I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
some of these are going to seem very silly.
Mm-hmm.
And some will seem like, well, of course she's asking for that. Good dancer.
Oh,
good
yeah.
vegetarian cook. A widower. Or someone who has experienced loss.
Yeah, but let me just interrupt there because that was my experience when I was doing a lot of first dating and all of that was that the widowers, as long as they weren't so caught up in their grief still, were actually sometimes a little more impressive than the divorced guys. They seem to have a little less emotional baggage, especially if the divorce guys had been a bitter one.
Yes, you're right about that, and I originally had that on my first list, my requirements. But then I discovered that there just weren't that many widowers who fit the other things that were in my area. I was just limiting myself too much. And I did meet some divorced people who had all the qualities of the widower that could really understand loss and could be empathetic and understood that I could still be grieving and yet ready to move on in some ways. And But if I just waited for an actual widower, I mean, I've met plenty of widowers too, but they didn't dance. They were sedentary. They didn't weren't interested in books. You know, they just didn't have the other qualities. So that's why I moved that to the other list. And then I have something as silly as profuse chest hair because I love that.
That's great. All right, so non-negotiables. Do you mind sharing what some of yours were?
Okay, I did share some, but I'll share them all if you want. So my 10 non-negotiables. Physically active, dances, reads and talks books, brainy, attracts me mightily, open-minded and communicative, loves sex and giving pleasure, has done the work on himself, loves his work or hobby, and is supportive of and interested in my work. Those are my 10 non-negotiables.
Okay, that's really good. That's really, really good.
But you see, if I hadn't made that list, much as I know I want those things, I can be reading profiles for months and responding to them and not even knowing, not noticing to look for those things.
Yes.
To look for evidence of that. And the other part to that is to portray myself so that someone who has those attributes will recognize me as someone that he wants to meet. Because that's the other part of it. And part of what we do in this workshop is I ask people to bring in their current online profiles.
Well, yes, you were telling me off air that you encourage these attendees to your workshops to read their profiles out loud.
Yes, and then we do this a ways into the workshop, maybe an hour, hour and a half into
it,
so that we already know each other a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And so we can respond and say, wow, you know, you didn't include anything about this quality, which is so strong in you.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, really? and we can also say, well, you're much more dynamic than that first paragraph sounds, or they'll maybe suggest what things to put in that aren't in or things to take out. There are some things, some ruts people get caught in. For example, they spend too much time saying what they don't want. Well, that isn't productive.
No.
It's the space to talk about who you are and what you're looking for, what you like to do, what's important to you. And give hints about those that list. You know, don't list them. Don't say, he's got to be this, because any got to be is a turnoff to people.
It's a turnoff.
Yeah.
And,
but to say, for example, I'm physically active and would like to meet others who are. If your idea of a great first date is talking about a book you've read. So work it in. Work it into your profile, so that people who would be on your list would say, whoa, this woman sounds very interesting to me. I'm going to write to her.
Exactly. And you've said that the profile is like a job interview for the first date.
It is. It's a job interview for the first date.
Yeah.
And one mistake that people make, I think, is that they think it's a job interview for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and they become, and then when they say they're looking for their soulmate.
Yeah, it's too intense.
It's too intense, too soon.
Even any sexual references, although I have it on my list, I'm not going to put that in my profile because it attracts the sleazier people.
Well, that's precisely why when I was online, I did not say I was a sex therapist.
Mm-hmm.
However, I said I was a psychotherapist and gerontologist, both of which are true, but I thought I'd leave out the sex therapist, but I did use it as a barometer of sorts for sorting out.
Once you had a first talk,
I mean, like with my current love, and I hope forever. we had a phone conversation after emailing and before we met, and I said, "Well, there's one more thing I want to tell you. I'm actually a sex therapist." And his immediate response was, Oh, isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
So he wasn't intimidated.
Well, I originally did not have anything about my work other than I write books, ask me.
And then
I had a few first dates with people who really were intimidated. And there are many people who would be, both by my my public persona, the fact that I had a public persona, and that I dealt with that issue, that I decided, okay, I'm just going to sort of sneak that in. So what I did with it is I say, as part of my profile, I write books and speak about senior sex, so I'm pretty outspoken. And I don't
know. Well, that's a filter right there.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Because you do want a man who can accept that and appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a very nice first date with someone, and then on a second date, and I rarely seem to have second dates, but that's another part to it. Yeah, well, I mean, I rarely want to have second dates, let me say that.
Okay.
But
well, your bar was set so high with Robert.
I know. But this person, we'd had a very nice first date, and we were both eager to have a second date. And at one point, he even bought my book in between, and he read it. Okay? So that was pretty cool, except that then on the second date, he said, he even admitted to me, I feel pretty insecure with someone who's so knowledgeable about sex.
Yeah, well,
like
he's honest.
If our relationship progressed to that I wouldn't measure up.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't measure people, and I'm really quite vanilla in my personal preferences.
Right.
And he said, oh, that's a relief. But it's still, because I am accepting of anything that people do that does not harm anyone else, including partners who don't happen to be there at the moment, if you're following that. In other words, not cheating, but if they're in agreement, whatever they choose to do is fine with me. And so in Naked at Our Age, there are some stories about BDSM and people who have non-monogamous relationships.
And polyamory and swinging.
Yes,
yes.
You know, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I am accepting of that. That doesn't mean I do all of that myself or that I even care about doing that. That was something that actually, that Robert he would say to me, how come you know about all this stuff? And I said, well, I'm so interested in this. And he said, but you know about this and this and this. And yeah, I know about lots of things. That doesn't mean I'm going to ask you to do them.
Exactly. Well, there are some parallels in your life as a writer of sexuality and my life as a therapist.
I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. But you need to know about it. If you're going to write about it, you need to know about these alternate lifestyles.
And I'm fascinated by it. I think the whole field of sexuality is fascinating. And
well,
I'll tell you,
I do,
Diana,
too.
If I were starting over again, going to college, deciding what to do with my life, I would become a sex therapist.
Oh, and you would be such a good one. But you know what you are anyway. You're a sex educator.
I am.
And in doing the kind of sex education you do, it's so therapeutic. So, you know, you're doing work that very few people can do.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And our sexuality is so much at our core of who we are.
It is.
And
even more than we realize sometimes, because our sexuality is fluid.
And fluid.
That one thing that takes women by surprise often, women especially by surprise, as they go into their past menopause and for some decades after that, is they discover they may be attracted to a gender they didn't think they were, or they may be wanting to experiment with some things they didn't think they were interested in, or they might want to go back to being what we call vanilla after being quite adventuresome earlier. So things can change. We don't define ourselves and stay there.
You, on your blog, Naked at Our Age, Better Than I Expected. What is it?
The easiest way to get to it is just nakedatourage.com.
Yeah, nakedatourage.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you review the book, Dear John, I Love Jane.
Yes.
And I liked where it says, lesbians are about intimacy. You're quoting, and Betty Friedan, so long ago when she wrote Fountains of Age, pointed out that there are older women. Well, first of all, there aren't as many older men. You get to a certain age, there aren't so many older men. But older women may decide they want the companionship, the intimacy, the sexuality, but with another woman.
One person who sent her story to Naked at Our Age, she's in the grief chapter.
Uh-huh.
And which I find such an interesting chapter, not only because it's so personal to me, but because people are resilient in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some want to be sexual with someone else right away, or some, it's been 12 years and they haven't yet, and everything in between. And there was this one woman who wrote about losing her husband, whom she loved very, very deeply, and they had a great sex life. And it had been some years when she hadn't had another lover. And she said, "I think I'm a one-woman man. Or one-man woman. I think I'm a one-man woman. But maybe I could explore having sex with a woman."
Right.
And it's just like, ah. It occurs to her. So I don't know what the dynamics are exactly for that kind of fluidity, but I do know it exists.
It does exist, and some women deciding to have another woman partner are very happy about it, as you I'm encouraging listeners to go to your blog spot. But as you said, the easiest way is nakedatourage.com to get into that.
Correct.
And it's such a good blog, and
Thank you.
Keep updating it. And
it's won a lot of awards.
I know. Yes, talk about that. You brag a little.
Oh, all right.
I'm encouraging you, so please do.
It's been on the top 100 sex blogs list for 3 years. It was number 14 this year out of the 100 winners out of the 500 applicants. And it's also been named by several aging sites and some other sexuality sites as being among the best for this genre. So, for example, an aging site will say it's one of the three best sexuality blogs, and then a sexuality site will say it's the best aging and sexuality blog. So I'm very happy it's being read and being noticed and having a spot in the blogosphere.
A big spot, and of course, more and more seniors in the last, especially, don't you think, in the last 5 years, have gotten up to speed in terms of their computer skills.
And absolutely.
They offer courses at senior centers, and many seniors know that not only can they read fascinating sexuality blogs like yours and learn a lot, but they can also stay in better touch with their grandchildren.
I don't think that's even novel anymore. All the interviews I conducted for Naked at Our Age were done by email.
Yeah.
All of those stories came to me in that form.
Yeah. You're right. It's not so novel anymore. Yeah. I'm thinking back to probably
a decade ago.
Yeah, about a decade ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, the online dating, let's...
Okay.
We have just about five more minutes, so...
Oh.
I know, and of course, the lucky thing is we get to have you again next week, so we can continue this.
Can I tell some cooties?
Oh, please.
These are the scary critters that signal run instead of answer. So if in your profile you do any of these things, it's going to just scare people away. Saying you're seeking your soulmate. Being in a big rush to have a committed relationship. Evading honesty. Not saying much about yourself. Not having a photo, or having a photo that's where it's difficult to see your face, or wearing sunglasses. It's one of my big things. Seems like so many men have their photos wearing sunglasses. We need to look at your eyes, guys. Mm-hmm, if you lie about your age or weight, you're just setting up a situation where you started the relationship by lying.
Yeah.
If you're trite, you're going to be boring. Walks on the beach, okay, who doesn't like walks on the beach? Snore, snore. Or if you make the sexual part come on too strong. It's, there are ways you can couch it if you want to make sure that you've got someone who is affectionate or passionate. But I think it's just, it's mainly going to be a turnoff if you mention it.
Yeah.
And so many profiles, I think, don't, they aren't specific. They don't show me who you are, just show anyone who you are as a person. So it's always a good idea to do the kind of thing that I do in my workshop, which is have someone else give you feedback on it, someone who knows you well and who knows the kind of person you are and the kind of date you would be and why you're wonderful.
With my single clients, I often recommend that they get a little bit of help, a close friend to help in writing your profile, because you may... the person may not be objective enough.
Yeah.
Those are all good. I also like to say during the, you know, if you notice a connection with the first date, laugh easily.
Oh, yeah.
The saying goes, laugh and the world laughs with you. But what's more important is that your new date laughs with you.
Good.
And if you two end up as a couple, you should know that a shared sense of humor shows that you two have common values and needs and interests and levels of intelligence. And, of course, all of these are keys to relationship longevity.
Right. Good point.
Yeah, the laughing and the shared sense of humor. And then I think if you're a woman, if you notice something good about the man, mention it.
That's a nice thing. You mean mention it in the profile or mention it on a first date?
On a first date.
Yeah.
Because Oscar Wilde noted, women are never disarmed by compliments. Men always are. That is the difference between the sexes. So, but I encourage my single clients to not lie, but be sincere. And giving a compliment is like giving a gift.
Yeah.
Make it about what he wants or will respond to.
And I think even on a first date to be saying, I'm really enjoying this.
Yes.
I'm enjoying getting to know you, and thank you for your candor. It's just a nice thing to say because they don't know how to behave. We don't know how to behave with each other. So if we're doing it right, let's give each other some strokes.
I agree. Say the words. And usually when we're older people, we can do that with more comfort.
Yeah.
Than in our, say, more possibly awkward 20s. Oh, my goodness. The Progressive Radio Network likes for me to end just a little bit before
okay.
the top of the hour.
We'll do it next week.
We'll continue this conversation next week. I'm thrilled about that. Joan Price. Go to joanprice.com. That will lead you to her blog and other places. Joan is just the best woman to talk to about, again, the joys of zesty sex. And she really does confront the challenges with knowledge, insight, and humor. So we're going to continue talking out loud about sex and aging next week, so please tune in. Thank you, Joan Price, so
Thank
much.
Thank you, Diana.
It was just a great time. I enjoyed every minute. So take care, everybody, and we'll hope that you'll tune in next week, and maybe you'll even want to call in next week. Ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?